Hello and welcome to One Game at a Time, where this week we look at full forwards and all things goal kicking. You can catch us on the Facebook at One Game at a Time, and our Twitter handle is at Origins of Footy. It's a very good evening to your favourite bogey golfer, Ryan Miller.
Thanks, mate. Thank you.
How are you hitting them?
Oh, golf's going all right, yeah. Better than last season. Yeah, where I didn't want to talk about it. Yeah. But we shouldn't take up the whole podcast, me sort of going through All right, sorry, mate, sorry. But no, I'm excited. We've got another guest. It's like four weeks and four this season. We've had some people want to hang out with us.
Yeah, they keep talking to us. I'm
shocked. I don't know what's happening. Maybe it's Finny, I don't know.
Yeah. Well, how are you, Finny?
Oh, I'm good, thank you, gentlemen. And this is something that has fascinated me. Anything to do with scoring in footy is one of my favourite things.
And our special guest this evening, his name is David Miller, affectionately known as David... Is it Frost or Frosty?
Frosty Miller.
Frosty Miller. And he played for the West Preston Football Club in the Diamond Valley League from 1985 to 1989. Had a year off to go over to competitors, presumably... Heidelberg Football Club in 1990, played there during a premiership year, but there's more to that story. Returned to West Preston from 1991 to 1996. It says here in his profile that he's a full forward slash wing, but I think his stats tell a very different story. He played 204 Diamond Valley games for an amazing 715 goals. We'll come to the specifics of most and least and all those sort of things, but we'd just like to say thank you so much for sharing your time very generously with us, Mr. Miller, and welcome.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure being here, and I love talking football.
Yeah, and that's what we're all about. So,
right spot.
Tell us, you're a full forward. Take us through your football journey from the time you were a young boy.
I played junior football at St Mary's in Greensboro. You know, always looking for a kick. And, just played football at West Preston and just enjoyed my time down there.
Greatest achievement on the field?
Definitely. Getting a senior game. That's just to get a senior game of football. Knowing that there are other players trying to get a game too, that's a great achievement, I think. The number one is playing in premierships, and that's just the ultimate. And we just had a 30-year reunion last weekend, and it's still special 30 years later.
I've got to ask, the switch for the 1 year in 1990 to Heidelberg, talk us through that.
I started my footy at Heidelberg at the age of 22, couldn't get a game. So I went over to West Preston where I could get a game of football, and... So I knew people at Heidelberg, my uncle's down at Heidelberg, and in 1989 West Preston finished on the bottom in First Division, and I was second leading goal kicker in the competition, and Mick Sullivan, who was the coach of Heidelberg, invited me to come over to Heidelberg. So I approached the club and they agreed that they would clear me on the condition I'd come straight back. So I honoured the gentleman's agreement, played 1 year at Heidelberg in a premiership year. And they went straight back.
Is there more to that story, the premiership year? Is there something you're not telling us?
I played every game bar the preliminary and the grand final because I broke my seventh vertebrae. Backing back into a pack. Someone put a knee up and I copped it right on the vertebrae and broke my seventh vertebrae. So I missed two games. And
you missed two games with a broken back and then came straight back after that?
Oh, no, that was the end of the season.
Oh, it was the end of the season, I beg your pardon. Listen. They said two games. I was like, wow, did you play after that? Did they have like a Masters game that was going on afterwards and get some of the old fellas back and we play again? Sorry, my interpretation was incorrect.
The records, that's getting a senior game was one of your big things. What was the most goals you've kicked in a game?
I've kicked 16. That was my best.
16. Now, I just want to go through some of the names that have kicked 16. Gordon Coventry.
Good research.
Peter Hudson.
Nice.
Peter McKenna. Tony Lockett. How many points did you kick on that day, and could you have beaten Fred Fanning's 18-1 in 1947 when he played for Melbourne at the Junction Oval against St Kilda?
I can't remember if I... the points, I just remember the goals.
Yeah. Very good answer.
Tell us, who were you playing against on that day, and do you remember it?
Yeah, it was Northcote Park. And one thing I do remember, I'd kicked 8 goals up until 3/4 time.
Mernda as well, you kicked 13 in a preliminary final.
Yeah.
Was that to win in 1988?
Yeah, that was a premiership year. We scraped in 4th position in 1988. Beat Eltham. Peter Moore played in that game. With Eltham.
Dual Brownlow medalist, Peter Moore.
Dual Brownlow medalist. I remember that clearly. I remember overawed being just, there's Peter Moore. I'm saying, there he's right there, and I'm playing against him. And we won the first semi, we won the preliminary, which I kicked 13, and then we won the grand final against Epping. But each game were underdogs, and we won the premiership. That was just fantastic.
I do want to mention what we're all thinking, the Collingwood versus Richmond 1929 grand final. Which
I think
is
it often.
Yeah, which is where Gordon Currie was used as a decoy, and his job was to get out of the full four position, and their instructions were to kick to Horry Edwards, who was another forward. Again, it apparently wasn't Jock McHale's move. He wasn't known for his tactician, which we've talked about. Probably Sid Coventry, but we're not sure. This had a huge effect on the Richmond coach at the time, Frank Checker Hughes. And this developed into his style of play when he moved to Melbourne in 1930. Now, as a side fact, Hughes was the man that changed the Demons' name from Fuchsias to Demons.
Right.
At the same time that many other clubs were going with these aggressive names. Footscray with the tricolours, and Hawthorn with the Mayflowers.
Yeah, yeah.
So after he moved to Richmond, there was this bloke called Norm Smith. And Norm Smith grew up supporting the Machine, or Collingwood, and loved teamwork. We'd go down to Victoria Park and just watch their training and love this idea of teamwork. And Hughes going on this decoy system that was used against him use Smith as this person. So apparently he was to lead up the ground, create space for the centermen and the rovers, all the resting ruckmen. In fact, that he said that the forward line is like a sales department of a good footy team, and North Smith is our travelling salesman. Then we fast forward 20 years and Smith's the coach, and he really perfected this. His whole thing is about forwards, full forwards in particular, self-sacrificing. So they would lead, and it allowed him to improvise in the forward line rather than just having that one structure. And what's a really interesting note is of those 6 premiership years in 1950, no player contributed more than 21% of the tally, which was the complete opposite to Essendon at the time in the 50s, where Coleman contributed 42%. What's your greatest memory of a forward tactic completely confusing the opposition? And were you part of teams that focused on this teamwork aspect, the Hughes kind of Smith, or were you more of a focal point of goal in the Coleman kind of state?
Yeah, I remember the year at Heidelberg, especially, like Mick Sullivan, our coach, said, Dave's controlling the forward line, you listen to Dave, and I'm thinking, wow, you know, these are Don Valley legends you're playing with, and I'm telling them what to do, I couldn't believe it. But anyway, the plan was to keep the forward line open for me to run into space. And you had blokes that just put it down your throat, and that was just fantastic. To run into space, knowing you're going to get it delivered in front of you, I think that worked. That was the pattern, I think. Whereas at West Preston, you had several forwards. You know, there was me and another option, Nick Murphy, Adam Bruni. So, and I played with Heath Shepherd, who played at Collingwood and Brisbane. And so it was like there's options down there. So, but I think the Heidelberg structure, it was more of a structure. But I think that was the tactic, really.
Can you tell us about fullbacks? Just tell us. I suppose you've got some stories, but ordinary tactics, stuff that was said to you, anything and everything that you've got on fullbacks.
Yeah, I played against some blokes. You know, you see them and they're full of tats and you think, oh God, it's going to be one of those days. And, you know, I've been told, you touch the ball, I'm going to knock your head off. I think, oh, great, this is going to be fun. other type of full back I played against, Vinny Ditali, who played at Laylaw. He ended up coaching West Preston. He just scragged you all day. He was grabbing your jumper. He was elbowing you, even when the ball's down the other end. And he'd just be in your ear all day. He'd be wrestling you, even when the ball's down the other end. But anyway, and then after the game, you have a drink with him. So that's what it was like.
Mm.
Yeah, and there's blokes that would give you a whack, but yet you're in the bar of them after the game having a drink. That was Dime Valley football back then.
To talk a little bit about the history of that competition, or the Northern Football League as it's now called, but Dime Valley, you know, Football League for so long. It was established like 1922, I believe. They had a big break around the war, sort of 5 years around both wars, actually.
Yeah.
Which is fairly significant. Compared to what, you know, other leagues sort of managed, I guess. And we've talked about it a little bit in some previous episodes where we had women's football coming into its own around the, you know, around the wars as well, Finney.
And depression, yeah.
Yeah. David, so looking at some of the more successful sides in the comp, obviously Heidelberg, from what I read, has got sort of 19 Div 1 senior titles. Greensboro, very, you know, very strong as well. Was that the case when you were playing? Were they the sort of two major sides?
Yep.
Obviously, when you're at West Preston, they've very successful at Div 2 by the looks of the statistics.
Well, we were successful. We win Division 2, we go up to Division 1, get smashed, and like sides like Greensboro, they were outstanding. They were the strong side in that era, in the late 80s.
Yep.
North Heidelberg, Laylaw, they won three consecutive premierships. They were the strong sides back then, and Heidelberg too.
Who were your heroes as a young fella just coming into football?
Peter McKenna, Malcolm Blight, in the later years, Dermot Brereton. Just loved the way he ran at the ball and tried to be like him, but he was just too big and strong and arrogant on the field. But those players, Malcolm Blight was a superstar, and then Gary Ablett, of course.
Did you try to emulate a particular player?
Dermot Brereton. Just the way he ran at the ball and ran hard at it and just tried to be a key position player. Yeah, I tried to copy him, really. I'd watch him and try and copy him, really.
Apparently, you were the sort of guy who would take a hanger every now and again out on the ground. Is that true?
Yeah, if the ball was there, you know, you think, right, I'm going to go for this. But I've always said, if you get your hands the ball, you just got to grab it and you got to hang on to it.
Yeah,
you don't get those chances very often, though.
Unfortunately, the Hawthorne team in 1971 didn't get those chances either, because they were instructed not to kick under any circumstances. Apparently, Kennedy, the coach, they were referred to the Kennedy's Commandos because of this huge preseason that they had in 72 leading to the 73 season. Of course, Hudson was injured during this season. So he came up with a structure because 2 years previous, they just introduced the 50 by 50 diamond it was at the time, not the square.
The centre square, you mean? That was a centre diamond.
Same dimensions. And his idea was no one in the forward half, four men in the square, as we have now, and then we had two groups of six defenders, and their job was to rush in at the centre bounce, leaving Moore and Knights on their own in the back. So under no circumstance were they allowed to kick under this structure. If possession was turned over, they'd rely on their pre-season training to be able to sprint back and help. So if we can imagine, kind of like we see now, where very rarely do we see players dispersed over the whole ground, all in one. My question is to you, Dave, has there been an introduction of a rule during the time that you played that significantly changed the way either you played a game or your team played?
I don't think there's much change there. It was like kick your key position player and then get front and centre. That was it, really.
You got some pretty fantastic records, though, David. Like, you know, 95 goals in Div 1, unfortunately missing out on a grand final in 1990. There were people, I think, who were out to get some some personal records, and we had a bit of a look. Finney, you found... Well, we found the same one, didn't we?
Yeah.
Trevor Sutton, which is Harold's son. So 249 goals in a season. According to this article, that is still the Australian record for goals in a season. Although I did, Mr. O'Sullivan, stumble on someone else.
Yeah, that's
so there's a guy called Quinton Graham who played in the Central District in South Australia. So he kicked 40 goals, 15 in round six. Now, I've tried really hard to try and find a total for this bloke, but I know for a fact in the same season he kicked 13 goals, 10 and 13 goals, 3. You start doing the maths and work, you think that this guy's must be a shout of getting close to it, but it's really, yeah, really sketchy. The article in the Advertiser highlights the fact that he kicked 40 goals, 15, but then in big letters he had one out on the full. So I thought it was a bit harsh. But maybe they're just highlighting the fact that there was another scoring shot. But
so that's 14 shots a quarter he's been having.
Yeah.
That's unbelievable.
It is. Well, and Trevor Sutton in 82, if you divide 249 by, I just did 23 rounds.
Yeah.
That's 10.82 goals a game. Almost 11 goals.
Based on that, I want to go to some of the heroes of the game if I can, just for some statistical information. At the top of the list is Tony Lockett. He kicked 1,360 goals at an average of 4.84. Then Coventry, 1,299. Of course, they've got either end of Docklands named after them quite appropriately. Then Jason Dunstall kicked 1,254 at an average of 4.66 in 269 games. Doug Wade from Geelong and North, just over 1,000. Ablett Senior, just over 1,000 as well. And then Jack Titus, Matthew Lloyd, Lee Matthews, all in the 900s. And conceivably only Buddy Franklin can exceed those records, because it's probably not going to happen in the near future. Buddy Franklin's kicked 878. He's played 273 games. He's still got 6 years or something left on that outrageous contract. And he manages to kick six or seven behinds a game as well. He's not efficient at putting them through. Number 10 on the list is your hero, Peter McKenna, who had the most beautiful drop punt in the game. Tell us, Frosty, why on earth can't they put it between the big sticks, these kids, these days? What's going on?
It could be a mental issue. They've talked themselves out before they've even kicked it. I look at their approach. I think it's wrong. But I reckon the key to all goal kicking from a set shot is the moment you drop the ball and then it hits your foot. That's the key moment in the process of goal kicking. Visualise your kick. Don't even look at the goal post. Pick a target behind the goals. It could be a tree. It could be that bloke in the red top. He's my target. I'm going for him. I'm not even looking at anything else. Seven steps. Always seven steps. Take off on your left foot, and once again that becomes automatic, and as you kick the ball you've got to lean over it, kick it like a 3-iron, not a 9-iron, and follow through on your kick, and it's all science, and keep the ball in front of you at all times.
Are you listening, St Kilda?
Yeah.
This is free advice.
Yeah.
It's interesting that you said goal kicking, actually, why can't they kick, and it's completely incorrect. They've never been more accurate. Across the history, they had a rate of 38.1% in 1900. That's first point. People kicking for goal, either missing or scoring.
So 38% were goals.
38% were goals. Yes, okay. In 2000, exactly 100 years later, 55%. Now it's sitting at around about that now in 2018. It's about 53% now. So it has increased dramatically.
Because there's fewer goals, therefore, when they miss them, it feels a lot worse.
Yeah. Maybe.
Because if you kick in 20 goals and equally 20 points, there's been five exciting moments each quarter. So you can wear that. But when you kick in seven goals for the game and you kick in 13 behinds, all of a sudden each one feels more like soccer where you've missed.
Again, that goes to that article we're talking about today, where this bloke's come out and said the points are useless in footy. So he wants to abolish the points, and he's put down to statistics only 13 games per year are decided by points, not goals. actually, if you miss, you haven't gained a point. What you have is you've given the opposition an opportunity to restructure. You've given them the ball back. Yeah. The reason why it was brought in was to stop draws.
I would argue that 13 draws in a year is a lot.
Yeah, I would too.
It is a lot, yeah.
So if he's saying only 13 games a season are decided by points, that's not to say, because those points could then be goals, that they're all of that, that 13.
Yeah, but yeah. What's not sexy about that? Like, if you've got 13 draws, it is a lot, but it fucks with the ladder when there's a draw. You know, if you're that team that's on the off draw,
I like draws being
as random as possible. Yeah. Given the volume of scores,
is it out in the full? If you've just got two posts,
yeah.
So it would be purely goals, or games would be decided just like
soccer. And you said all of them are.
Or my one, which we talked about in the pub the other week, which is if it hits a post and comes back in field, just play on.
Yeah, I'm going to
try that. Years ago, I reckon.
Did that in a preseason cup? Did they?
They tried that. They did.
Yeah, I thought, I didn't know if it was the same, but the ball burst and the cover went through the goals and the bladder went through the points. That's what it was. And the field up boys and the goal boy. I don't know what it is. It's a bloody miracle.
That's what it was.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
And very funny.
Just flew out.
And very funny by that umpire.
I'd just like to thank the gentlemen around the table for such a wonderful evening of discussion. Thank you very much to you, Finn.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you to you, Mr. Miller.
Thank you very much, guys.
And I get to say it twice. Thank you to you, Frosty Miller, for joining us for our episode about full forwards.
It's been a pleasure, thank you very much.
And don't get ahead of yourself and take it one game at a time.